July. Lowell, Moncton, New Brunswick.
The Civic broke down in Parsboro. I've been hitchhiking since then. Hitchhiking is a crazy experience. I didn't expect it to be so, because the guy who drove me from the Sackville off-ramp to here, he asked me for a blowjob. I told him I wasn't interested, that I wasn't going to give him one. That pissed him off. He demanded I give him gas money instead, so I gave him $20. Sometimes you gotta be proactive with setting up boundaries with people, I guess. There's this whole other side to humanity out there. Like part of a sound you can't hear. Streaming through these interactions. Like signals being transmitted on some kind of weird frequency. You can't hear it, but you know it's there. Underneath everything. Animalistic. Like a feeling of teeth and muscles being tensed. Not everyone I've come across has been super responsive about being interviewed either. Some people just politely refuse, but I've had a lot of people tell me to fuck off, or go fuck myself, or get the fuck out of here. There's a lot of stuff that doesn't make it onto the tapes. Sounds that don't want to be captured. I'm in Moncton, sitting down in this cafe called The Laundromat. Everyone here is speaking French, and my French isn't the greatest, so I can't really tell what the other customers are talking about. It's like I walked into some kind of weird foreign film or something. I'm drinking a pint of craft beer right now, and I have no idea what craft beer even is. I don't even know what the bartender just said to me. I just said, "We," a couple times, and I gave him a $10 bill. He just kind of looked at me funny and poured me this pint. Tastes alright, I guess. But I really need to eat something. Maybe a donair. Maybe a poutine or something. Tofino is 6,000 kilometers away.
Mark, 35, Dieppe, New Brunswick.
I tell her, I say, "Janie, don't worry about so much what Joseph says. No, I don't care what he thinks. If I don't care what he thinks, then why should you care what he thinks?" "Well, you shouldn't, for crying out loud." But she does anyway, and I know why. Joseph, well, he's got a couple screws loose, that's for sure, but he's real sharp about lots of other stuff. He knows what's going on in the world, and I mean, not in all the world. Nobody knows what's going on in all the world. I mean, he couldn't tell you what the Greeks are up to over in Greece, or what the Israelites are doing to each other, but then again, he would have his theories about them. And the theories, more often than not, would be real close to a kind of unsaid truth. That stuff that people never talk about. That stuff that's so deep down we don't even admit it as truth kind of stuff. Joseph comes real close to figuring out a lot of that unsaid truth. He's got a sharp nose for it. That's why Janie's scared. She figures there's something that Joseph sees that we can't, as far as having a kid's concerned. Something under the surface, something he sees but won't tell us about. Maybe she's worried because she thinks Joseph thinks I'm not committed to her, that I'll cheat on her. Maybe I think Joseph thinks the same about her, but her eyes don't wander. Neither do mine. So what does Joseph see? What does he see but we can't? What's he not telling us about? And that's how and why the argument comes around. That's why I'm trying to hold her while she's trying to push me away. Me hearing myself say, "Janie, don't worry so much." And she's telling me she can't help it. And I say, I know you can't. But all the time, both of us wishing things were different. Which is funny because we don't actually wish anything were different at all. And for the rest of my life, I want to be with her. And her, I'm pretty sure she wants to be my girl, be with me for the rest of my life. and neither of us want to move. We both want to live here, even though it could be shitty weather, or and our apartment's not in the best neighborhood, and the building we're in's falling apart and everything. Our family's close by. Joseph's close. But we get our heads and our hearts all tied up in knots a lot of the time, and find ourselves wishing things were different. And by that, I mean different in ways we don't even know. Like, crazy different, but the same. Like, the same, just maybe if we won the lotto or something. And that would be the kind of different that would help. We'd still live in town, still stay close to the family, but we wouldn't be in so much debt. And we wouldn't have to worry so much about what we're spending on groceries so much every single damn time we walk into the grocery store. That's all I mean by different. We just wish, well, that everything could be like it is, just not having to worry about all this other stuff that seems outside of us, which is actually us. Because being poor isn't us. We don't feel poor, you know? But we're living poor. And that pressure, that feeling of that pressure, I mean, that's what aggravates all the subconscious fear and worry and bullshit that we keep feeling. Joseph, for as smart and as sharp as he is, he don't gotta worry about that. His wife, Janie's mom, she's dead. He's living la vie complètement seul, by himself. He's got to pay for his own cheese and lobster meat, and that's it. Well, retired with his pension and trying to take the pressure off of us, trying to keep the stress away from Janie, it's killing me. I can't find a job here that pays more than $12 an hour. I had a job with a moving company last year. That was great. All under the table stuff, but then the guy who owned the truck threw out his back and became a cokehead in his downtime and never got the business up and running again. Guess that's another way you can retire. And retirement. Yeah, not for me. I won't be able to retire. So there's that pressure on top of everything. It takes something to be in a relationship. It takes something to keep them going. But the world ain't turning in a right way to keep people together. The world's spinning. Sure, but it's spinning us all apart. This week, I gotta find a way to come up with $650 more dollars for rent by Friday, 48 hours from now. You tell me how that's gonna happen, right? I mean, you tell me. Because I've got nothing. And I'm gonna lose everything. And it makes me want to say, fuck Joseph, even though I love him. And it makes me want to leave my girl, even though I love her. But the world's spinning me apart. What's funny is, back when I was still working with the movers, most of the people we moved, it was breakups. I mean, mostly. People going through divorces or breaking up. It's happening everywhere, all the time. It's happening now. Two streets over from here. That apartment building down the street. That duplex over in Benoit. Maybe even in that shithole across the street. Yeah.
Sandra, 43, Riverview, New Brunswick.
I don't know what I'm doing right now, talking to you. I spend all day talking to people. I spend all day talking to people I don't know. I don't know how you managed to get me to talk to you. It's probably because I'm too tired to try and get away from you. Or make up some excuse why I can't talk to you. I follow a script at work. When I handle the incoming calls, people looking for rental cars. I kind of like the script in a way. I can autopilot my way through the day sometimes. The tricky ones, the people with all the pent-up rage issues, they can be tough. But I just refer back to the script to get through them. The hardest is when you get an American with a really thick accent from the Southwest. They can be tough to understand, for me, sometimes. Sometimes they talk really slow, too, and you just kind of have to wait for them to finish their sentences. That can be a bit annoying. Funny thing about Americans, though, the thicker their accent, the more polite they are. At least over the phone. At least in my experience. I guess my experience could be a lot different than other people's. But that's why you're recording me, isn't it? To get my unique perspective. I like talking to people. I do. It's just after 10 straight hours of doing it, you kind of get a little pooped from doing it. It can be tiring. But it can get kind of addictive too, I guess. I have a cat at home. I don't really have a lot of social friends. Most of my social friends have moved away, got married, or for other reasons. My mother, she lives in town. My cat doesn't really make any noise. His name is Pete. He doesn't purr. He doesn't mew. He doesn't meow. He's silent. He does his own thing, and he's silent. When he wants something, like, say, if I've forgotten to feed him, he just sticks his claws into my feet. Or stares at me. Sometimes I'll wake up and he'll be sitting on my chest just staring at me, not purring or anything. I thought most cats purred, don't they? So in an odd way, the Americans looking to reserve their rental cars, they're kind of a relief, even though they're exhausting. They make me feel normal. When they talk to me, answer my questions, even if they're having a fit on the phone, sometimes I can even make small talk, not related to rentals. And I get to hear about the weather in Henderson, Texas, and what people in Cicero, Illinois are thinking about the latest election campaign. What some lady in Anaconda, Montana had for breakfast. All these voices coming at me through the earpiece. All this chatter, and when I get home, there's nothing. Pete is a very quiet cat. I must be one of the strange ones, yeah? That you've interviewed? Lady tells you she's tired of talking to people, then 5 seconds later she's telling you the opposite. People are paradoxical, though. At least they're not silent.
Sienna, 25, Hillsboro, New Brunswick.
I haven't made it down to the rocks yet this summer. We've been out to Parley Beach a couple of times already. My boyfriend took me down to Lawrencetown 2 weeks ago because he's big into surfing, too. But we haven't gone down to the rocks yet. They are nice, though. You can just have that coffee, okay? I'm not going to charge you for just a coffee. If you get a sandwich or anything, I'll have to charge you for that. The coffee I can just write off. I pretty much drink an entire pot myself on one of these shifts anyway. I'm addicted to the stuff. Can't help it anymore. There aren't that many jobs here in the town, so I'm just happy I don't have to drive into Moncton every day. Not crazy about Moncton. I mean, it's all right. It's not my favorite place in the world. I like Halifax better. Well, I don't even really like Halifax that much, but I like Lawrencetown. I guess I just don't like cities that much, even though you can't really call them cities here in the Maritimes. I mean, I went to Montreal for my first year of university, before I dropped out and came back. Montreal is a city. You should totally hit Montreal if you're just traveling. Go to Schwartz's. Schwartz's smoked meat sandwiches. I wish I was eating a smoked meat sandwich from Schwartz's. Our sandwiches are all right. Our roast beef is okay. But I make them every morning at the start of the shift. And all the ingredients, I mean, the owner just buys the ingredients from the grocery store down the street here. And there's nothing gourmet about them. Oh, and a black cherry pop to go with it. The smoked meat sandwich? That would be awesome. We're usually a lot busier than this. There haven't been as many tourists yet this season. Tourist season's been going slow. Usually there's a few more people in here. More people passing through normally. People are staying a bit more put this year. Sometimes everyone waits until August to hit the Maritimes. I don't know that for a fact. That's just what I seem to recall hearing. There was a guy, though. Came through last week. He liked the roast beef sandwich I made so much, he tipped me $20. I wasn't sure if he'd done it on purpose, though, because who tips $20 for a sandwich? I mean, he had a coffee, too, but still. The coffee we get here, it's the same type of coffee you'd get at a gas station. It's nothing special. It's on par with gas station coffee, which is really just a small step up from drinking motor oil. I do put care into the sandwiches, though, even though the ingredients are just from the store down the road. Anyway, he had tipped me $20, so I was like, "Oh, excuse me, sir. I think you might have made a mistake. This is a $20 bill." And he kind of looked at me funny, and he was all like, "Yeah?" But I couldn't really read him, so I had to keep at him to figure him out. So I was like, "I'm sorry, it's a $20 bill, is what I mean." And he said, "Spend it while you still can." But he had stopped looking at me at this point, and he was already turned away and moving toward the door. He was dressed in an all-black suit with his hair all slicked back, and his skin was so tan he was almost orange. And he never took his sunglasses off, the whole time he was here. And so I was just standing there holding this $20 bill in my hand and staring at his back, watching him walk away with my mouth, it must have been a little open, you know? And when he got to the door, he turned around, and he saw me staring at him with my mouth open and the $20 bill in my hand. And his eyebrows, they kind of bunched up. No. What's that word? Furrowed. His brows furrowed. And he didn't know what was wrong with me, and he said, "What?" Just like that. "What?" And he smiled. I think it was a smile. He had weird teeth. And so I just said, "Oh, nothing. Have a good day." And I was about to say something else, but he was already out the door and halfway to his car before I could blink. I don't know what he meant by the whole "spend it while you still can" business. But still, I got tipped $20 for a friggin' roast beef sandwich. So after I closed up the cafe, I walked right down the street to the Scotiabank, put it right into an envelope, and deposited it right into my bank account. Someday I'm gonna travel to Portugal. The Portuguese coast. All these beautiful fishing villages along the Portuguese coast. Me and my boyfriend, we've been planning it ever since we hooked up. You know what the word for beautiful is in Portuguese? Bonito. So I know I make good sandwiches. That's the trick, you know? To everything. Figuring out how to make something awesome out of just regular stuff. Like my sandwiches. My sandwiches are bonito.
Wallace, 55, Hopewell, New Brunswick.
If those fucking wing nuts come around here again, I'll fill their asses full of birdseed. And by birdseed, I mean buckshot. And by buckshot, I mean bullets. Last time they came, they knocked on my door and asked permission. I told them to go to hell. That's why they didn't ask this time. That's why they parked down the road a ways, edge of my property this time. You know who I'm talking about. The guys in the suits. Those sunburnt cocksucker suit-wearing pricks. The ones with the sunglasses. I'll knock the goddamn sunglasses from their faces. They try and trespass on my land again. Poking all over my fucking... This land was given to me by a great-great-great-fucking-great-great-grandfather by the crown for being a good fucking loyalist. Passed down generation to generation, hand to hand of my kin over the course of 200-odd fucking years. God knows what they're looking for. They said they wanted to do an egg count of the birds down there. That was bullshit. They said they were with the Department of Natural Resources. That was definitely bullshit. Department of Natural Resource guys don't dress like that. And even if they were from the Department of Natural Resources, what the hell do they care about the fucking egg count of those birds down there, the fucking GMOs? Why the hell does the government care? Not just counting the GMO eggs, but also keeping track of the fucking number of children everybody has? The number of guns I got in my basement? Like some giant fucking perverted supercomputer. Like some peeping Tom calculator device. Leave the fucking birds alone. Down along the cliffs, stay out of their fucking nests and leave them alone. Like the GMOs don't have enough problems they gotta beak through. I got my back brace now. I can shoot this fucking rifle now. If they start up with their trampling through my bushes again, hey, you fucking wingnut cocksuckers, whoever you are, you sickos, leave the fucking birds alone. Just leave them the fuck alone.
End of tape, FW722B3. Finn, 68, Alma, New Brunswick.
So it's on now, and I'm being recorded right now, right? Am I being recorded? I am. Okay. Nod your head. Okay. Okay, I'm being done. So you're familiar with the area, right? You've been out to the Hopewell Rocks, and yes? Well, yes. Have you been out there or have you not? Nod your head or shake it. Now, nod it for yes and shake it for no. How's that? Okay. So you've been out to the rocks. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. They're pretty, aren't they? Yeah, they're pretty. They're real pretty. And now they got enough people working out there, you don't get so many idiot tourists getting stuck out by the tides and caught. How about Cape and Rage? You been out there, Cape and Rage? Yeah? That was a yes, right? Okay, yeah. It's quite the spectacle out there, isn't it? Were you out there yesterday when the fog crept up? Were you there? Yeah? Yes? Or no? Yeah. Okay, you're yes. Odd and yes. Yes. Comes in quick, doesn't it, that fog? One day you're under the sun, the clear blue sky, and the next thing you know, you're cutting through pea soup. Pea soup fog. It's pretty thick stuff. Always used to spook me when I was a young fella, growing up here. Whenever I was out that way, well, we'd be out haying or riding the bike. My buddies and me, we'd ride out there to goof around or whatever, and sometimes that fog would just overtake us. Like, you know, it just swoops in, and you can see it coming right at you, and it moves fast. This big white wall, the white mist, and you know, God knows what's in it. And it's moving so fast, it just kind of overtakes you. And you know it's going to. Like, the fog here, it's just like fate. You know, you can't outrun it. You can never keep ahead of it on a bike. But you can keep ahead of it in a car these days, yeah. But, I mean, that's about it. It's inescapable fate, or fog. I'm talking about fog right now, right? And, well, when you're a kid, there's like the regular everyday world, and then there's the fog world. It's almost like it was the reverse of the everyday world, the fog world was. And the minute the fog wall overtakes you, everything around you would be this thick white air. Well, it felt like the rules were all of a sudden they were different, you know? Different rules at play in the fog world, and anything could happen. So you kind of had to watch your back. Proceed with caution, we'd say. Well, proceed with caution so you didn't fall off the cliffs by accident, those cliffs at Cape and Rage, like some idiot tourist might do. And look over your shoulder to make sure your friends hadn't fallen either. And you look over your shoulder to make sure your friends hadn't disappeared on you. And, well, you look over your shoulder for the boogeymen, too. Because the boogeymen, they live in the fog. I'm sure you've heard of them. We all knew them as kids. I never ran into them personally, the boogeymen, but I suppose that's the reason I got to grow up and get old. They just never got me. Well, they did get one of my chums, though. Donnie. Donnie Clutterbuck. Yeah, they got him. I think we're about 11. Well, I was 11 anyways, and I think he was. Yeah, he was probably 11, too. Long time ago, I can't remember all the specifics. Donnie was bigger than the rest of us, and he was a little slower than the rest of us, too, and, well, we were a bunch of us out on the Cape one day, and the wall of fog rushed in on us, and what year would that be? It would be 1958. I think I got the math right on that one. The fellow wrote a history about the town a couple of years back, and he wrote this story into it. Yeah, it happened in 58, I'm sure. It's like I say, Donnie was slower than the rest of us, though, and the fog, it overtook us. But we were real close to where we were going, meeting the rest of our friends, and so me and Matthew and Thomas, we did not proceed with caution. We sped up on our bikes, and we wanted to get there quicker, and we didn't look back over our shoulders, making sure our friends were still there. And by the time we got to the meeting place, we noticed Donnie wasn't with us anymore. So we waited for him, and he never came. And we hollered out his name, and he never answered. And Finally, the fog melted away, and, well, we looked, and he was nowhere to be found. And they made up a search party for him the next day, but he was just nowhere to be found. And the men in the boats, they combed the shoreline of the base at the cliff for him, and he was nowhere to be found. And, you know, they never found his bike, neither. Because the boogeyman that lived in the fog took him. And I remember that. I remember thinking it when I was a kid. Now, do you believe in the boogeyman? Nod your head yes if you do, and shake your head no if you don't. Now, was that a nod or a shake? Yeah. Donnie Clutterbuck.
Adam, 44, Fundy National Park, New Brunswick.
My name is Adam Robinson, and I am waiting for my dog to show back up. I came here 2 days ago for the weekend with my dog, whose name is Hank. He's a Labrador retriever and pretty good at not running off, usually. So that's kind of part of the reason why I'm a bit freaking out right now. I'm not freaking out. I'm calm. He is coming back. Anytime now. I called into work tonight to let them know I'm not going to be in tomorrow morning. I got here on Friday, now it's Sunday, and it's 7 p.m., and so even if I left now, I won't reach Sussex until 9, another 2 hours basically to Woodstock, so I really wouldn't even be getting home until 11 or almost midnight. I don't know. I really don't want to leave here without my dog. I first got the dog when me and my girlfriend at the time, now ex-girlfriend, got the dog to try and, well, we thought getting a dog would maybe, I don't know, cheer my girlfriend up, but it just kind of pissed her off that I would get a dog when getting a dog wasn't really addressing any of the problems we were going through at the time. I kind of had an honesty problem with her about money. I would spend money on things that weren't bills, like cigarettes, beer, and stuff, and then I would lie about it, and she started catching me in those lies, and the next thing I knew, she was so sick of me, so sick of being lied to that there really wasn't anything I could say anymore that could fix what happened between us, so I went to the pet store and I bought Hank. But this only pissed my girlfriend, now ex-girlfriend, off even more because this doesn't solve anything between us, and we needed that money for the power bill, and you get the story. Yeah. So I had just got this dog, and I was in kind of an emotional place because I wasn't sure if I could be trusted to take care of anyone or be in a relationship with anyone, and I was a big mess, vulnerable. I was very vulnerable. And I think the dog probably sensed that, and I think the dog really capitalized on that. I mean, Hank is great. Hank sleeps on the bed, sits on the couch with me. I mean, Hank is like a person, except he's better than a person, really, because I never have to lie to him. He never asks me what I've done with the money that was supposed to go to the power bill, and I mean, he eats way less than my ex-girlfriend ever did, so I'm saving a lot on groceries, really, because I mean, I can live off frozen pizza and Kraft dinner, and I'm fine, you know? And I can talk to Hank. Hank is there for me. And he listens. I mean, maybe he doesn't always understand what I'm saying, but I never needed to be understood. I never wanted to be understood. I just wanted someone to listen to me and love me, and that's it. Hang out and watch Game of Thrones with me. You see, the thing about people is, people are too intense for other people. Everything's got to be hard truth and total honesty, and it's all got to be expressed in words and in blood and in writing. Every single moment of your free time is accounted for in a ledger. Every single action, every word, every emotion, every feeling. Not with dogs. With dogs, you can be truthful, and they don't need it in writing. They don't hold it against you for the rest of your life and make judgments about you and tell all their friends about how much of a liar you are. Anyway, Hank went missing on Friday night. You got to keep your dog on a leash in the park. It's a rule. You're not supposed to leave them unsupervised. You're not supposed to. But I had to take a shit. What was I going to do? Take Hank into the shitter with me? So I left him tied up to a tree beside the tent. The washroom, of course. I got assigned the campsite furthest away from the friggin' washroom in the whole place. And I just had to take a shit. which I don't like. Rushing, you know, the bowel stuff. Came back and no Hank. The leash looks like something chewed through it. I don't know why Hank would chew through his own leash. I talked to the park staff. They said they'd keep an eye out for him. That was Friday night. Nothing yesterday. No Hank. Went to the park office. They haven't seen anything. No one has. I figured dogs were great because they're not like people. They don't just up and leave you. Not like people. And out of the blue, like people too, my girlfriend just left one day because she couldn't stand me. Hank just bit through his own leash Friday night? Maybe I should have taken him to the shitter with me. I couldn't sleep last night. Kept hearing these weird noises in the woods. Probably just normal noises for anyone who knows anything about wood stuff. But for me, they were weird. Like night birds or something. I can't take Tuesday off work. If I take more than one day off at a time, they won't like it. I don't have any clout there. I just want Hank to come back. I think I don't want to be recorded anymore. Okay?
Fortune of Wolves was written by Ryan Griffith. The series was produced by Big Noise Audio Collective and presented by Theatre New Brunswick. The show was directed by Ryan Griffith with help from Gillian Hansen. Recording, editing, and sound design by Matt Carter. Music for the series was created by Counting On Downstairs with additional scoring by Matt Carter. To learn more about the series and the artists involved, visit tnb.nb.ca or look for the Big Noise Audio Collective on Facebook. This episode featured Cat Hall as the Chief Archivist, Jason McIntyre as Lowell, Jake Martin as Mark, Abby Page as Sandra, Sydney Hallett as Sienna, Ryan Griffith as Wallace, Daryl Mishu as Finn, and Thondwe McCarthy as Adam. Next time on Fortune of Wolves.
I'm losing it, right? In front of this kid. He didn't know what hit him.
Holy shit! Check out all of these people with problems just like mine.
That's me for you. In a nutshell, I'm a nutcase. Nutcase in a nutshell.
Some kind of American military technology. Maybe they're trying out some new kind of drone or something.
The road ahead of you is nothing but a road. Asphalt and tar. Black death. Your adventure will never exist.